Wow. Well, it's the 29th of October, 2019, in the Lucy Coleman studio. Good afternoon, folks. How are you? It's about going on 4 o'clock. And as you read on the page, I'm going through an awful lot of material that I'm finding here in my office. I found this book. This book was first published in 1949. Since then, there's been three other printings. Let's see if I got this right here. It's a book that I use when I try to preface my teaching of the Old Testament, The Heart of Hebrew History, a study of the Old Testament by H.I. Hester, who is vice president and a professor of Bible at the William Jewell College. Let me ask my little Google, where is the William Jewell College located in this country? Now, let me see.
Here's what I found.
They can tell me right here. Okay. You know, it's amazing. You can go to these phones and find this out. William Jewell College is a private four-year liberal arts college of 787 students located in Liberty, Missouri, in the United States, founded in 1849 by members of the Missouri Baptist Convention and endowed with $10,000 by William Jewell, the author and founder was Robert S. James, a Baptist minister and father of the infamous Frank James and Jesse James. Oh my goodness, I didn't know that. And it was associated with the Missouri Baptist Convention for over 150 years until its separation in 2003. And it is now an independent institution. The college is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. I taught from this book, Old Testament Survey, here in my own study, here in my home, taught many brothers. If any of you are still listening to me, you remember what I was teaching you in this in this fantastic little book. I want to take a little time and read some things to you, because when I was putting together my syllabus of basics of the faith, and man, I can't believe this. This college was instituted. The motto of the college was trust in God and work. No wonder I took to the text. I like that. Liberty, Missouri, the campus is a suburban type campus. The athletics, NCAA division. Their nickname is the Cardinals. And they have a website, which I'm going to go to right now. I didn't know that they had a website. Jewell Education, it says, the world needs critical thinkers. Wow! This is amazing. Yeah, Jewell Critical Thinkers. Even have a black man here in the college. Oh yeah, this is a historic Christian college. But the reason that I found this to be very interesting is because as I'm going through this and I came upon the text here in my library here in my office, and I'm throwing out things that I don't want, you know, just trashing it, getting rid of it. And I recall, because in this book they did teachings on the Canaanites. You know, like the Jebusites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, and all of that. And so when they did that, I read that, and I said, that's not true what he wrote about the Canaanites. He said that they were a very backwards, ignorant people, and I used to teach them in basics of the faith. I said, you know, you can't believe everything that these guys had. I guess he had to make his mark. At that time, when the college was started, and I'm presupposing because I have no, that would really be a good thing for me to do, to historically search and see how African Americans were treated if they were allowed to even go to this Baptist school in Missouri. But I found it just, here it is, 144. Let me go to that page because, and I love the book. I mean, the text is a fine written text. He was very, very astute. But I want to just read some of the things that he said about the Canaanites, because they have these handwritten maps of it, and then he has Moab, like right under the 12 tribes. He has Naphtali, Asher, Zebulun, Isaac, Manasseh, Gad, Ephraim, Dan, Benjamin, Judah, Simeon, and then right under that they have Moab, Edom, and Canaan, the settlement of the tribes. Now, knowing that these, you know, that these were people of color, it prompted me to read up on this. Just let me read some of the things that I've underlined for you as I was going through the text. And this added an extra spark of energy for me to do another webcast, because I said, oh no, I'm not free yet. I'm not out of here. An appraisal, I don't want an appraisal of Joshua. I want, here it is. Religion and culture of the Canaanites. This is what I wanted to share with you. And I'll share some of the things that I don't agree. I believe that many white theologues that were teaching Christianity, especially in the Old Testament, they have everybody written off, but the Hebrews. And that's wrong, because there were certain cultures that were foundational, that were existing for years. In another connection, we have spoken of various pagan tribes. I'm reading him now. The various pagan tribes which occupied Canaan at the time of the conquest. Of these peoples, the Canaanites were the most powerful. With them, more than any others, the Hebrews were to be involved into the next century. They were cruel, fierce fighting people whose moral and religious practices were exceptionally wicked and repulsive. When I first read that, I found that kind of, and then I kept reading the biblical account of Leviticus 18, 21 through 30, and Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 30 through 32, tell something of these abominable practices. Okay, then it says that the discoveries of the archaeologists have given most impressive corroboration to the biblical record. The work of Dr. McAllister at ancient Gezer, a Canaanite city, was especially revealing. Uncovering this ancient mound layer by layer, he came upon the stratum belonging to the 14th century BC, the one belonging to the time of Joshua, where he found a high place, an area where the Canaanites carried on their worship, the great place of Giza, had its foundation in the second stratum below the Israelite. It was therefore one of the Canaanite high places. It contained 10 monoliths or upright pillars, the tallest of which was 10 feet and 9 inches, and the lowest 5 feet and 7 inches. Now, You know, I thought about that. These people were digging to find these ancient places like this. And this just have always amazed me about how you can do that archaeology and do the digging and find certain things about these structures. And it's just amazing and stimulating to my mind. Okay, where was I? Here we are. These pillars ran in a curved line in the general direction of north and south. And all of these except one were of the kind of stone found in abundance around Giza. These had been taken from the immediate neighborhood and bore no marks of a tool. That's amazing. That shows me how brilliant the people were. No marks of a tomb. And then as I continue to read him, he says, the one which was the sacred one, worn smooth in places by the continuous rubbing and kissing of devotees. In other words, the devotees rubbed and kissed these things, was a stone found around Jerusalem. The excavators are of the opinion that these were erected about the time of Abraham, some 2,000 years BC, and were used with frequency each year until the time of the exile, 587 BC. Hard by these two large caves, connected by a narrow, crooked passage so that they could be used for the giving of oracles. The area of this high place seems to have been about 150 feet by 120 feet. Apparently, no buildings were connected to it. So this is a brilliant piece of artifact, whatever their worship was. Wow, let me continue to read. I'm at the bottom of page 142nd, reading under the conquest and the settlement of Canaan. The whole area of this high place was a cemetery of newborn babes. In all probability, they were firstborn children sacrificed to the deity. Okay. These were enclosed in jars with the body put in head first. This is amazing when you read about this archaeology. Two or three small vessels, usually a bowl and a jug, are put in with them. That these were sacrifices is shown by the fact that they were children. And it could not have been a burial place since such was considered unclean and hence would not be near the place of worship. Now, you know what I'm thinking as I'm reading this? All this stuff was excavated and dug up. And if it's in that, kept in that fine shape, and these American archaeologists, so to say, can make this statement by this. This was amazing that they were able to uncover that. And that only led me to think how weird it's going to be when they uncover the place where we are. Oh, my goodness. Now, it goes on and says, it could not have been a burial place. Okay. The large collection of suggested images of Astarte, that's A-S-T-A-R-T-E, found in this place bears convincing testimony to the immoral worship that went on here. All these images were designed to foster in the worshiper that type of service described in Isaiah 57:3. Now let me get my Bible because I want to read that. I don't have Isaiah 57:3 memorized in my mind. Where's my Bible? Oh, here it is. The office is kind of messed up here, so you have to really forgive me. Isaiah 50:73. And when I find these things and I'm reading it, well, of course I'm feeling excited about it because I'm saying, my God is taking me back to the historical thing. Let me go. Isaiah 57:3. And people know this. Well, let me read it. Isaiah 57:3 says, but come here, you sons of a sorcerer's offering of an adulterer and a prostitute. No, but that doesn't say anything about what they excavated here. And so I reject that. That's what I mean. The white theologue, when writing about other cultures that are far older than his own, far more advanced than his own, would write and say such horrible things about these people. This is their culture. I mean, and to take Isaiah 57:3, let me read it again. But come here, you sons of sorcerers. How do I know he's talking about the Canaanites here? Wait a minute. And then he says, offering of an adulterer. Well, what made them adulterer by offering their babies' little bodies? I don't get it. And the prostitute? No, this man had to choose. That's what I meant. When I read this book the first time, I said, the Canaanites weren't like this. This is a biased opinion of a white theologue writing in 1949 about a culture far older than any culture and calling that culture a curse. That's what he did. And he says the Canaanite religion was the nature worship of an agricultural people. Baal gave grain, oil, and wine. For this his worshipers prayed to him, and for this they thanked him. Baal was identified with nature. Its yearly revival and death were a revival and death of the god. In this revival and death, his worshipers took part. Now, this is him writing about the Canaanites. In connection with the latter, it was their religion to mourn and mutilate themselves. In connection with the former, to give themselves over to the most unabridged merrymaking. Okay. Baal was the giver of life. He was also the destroyer of life. Well, let me say this. So is the God of the Bible. You don't believe me? I believe it's Isaiah chapter 45. I remember that. And is that verse 7? Yes, listen to this. The one forming light and creating darkness and causing well-being and causing calamity, I am the Lord who does all these, just like the god Baal. And so are they talking about the same deity? Or is it Hester's negative connotation of something? That's why I love reading these old, old books and then comparing all these religions together. And it's giving me a new heart as I go through clearing out my office and getting rid of stuff. Let me continue to read this, and I hope that you're enjoying it as much as I am. As the letter, men sought to appease his wrath by offerings. The Catholics have been doing that for years. Even of their children, as the former men revealed in his bounty with the wildest orgies. The life of nature appeared to them to rest on a mystical process of generation. Hence, sexual immorality was a feature of their worship. and the worship of their gods. Well, you know what? There's been so much sexual immorality in biblical Christianity in the 20th century. The Pope, I understand, just came to his senses and stated that he wanted to make the legalization of a priest marrying a woman the law now, to try to stop it, because somebody got to get off some kind of way. So, all right, talk about the Canaanites all you want to. Let me continue to read this. It's a very interesting reading. He said, each city had a Baal, B-A-A-L, that's the god Baal, as its god, and its consequence of the likeness of the life of the various cities was that there was no great difference between these various Baals. Okay. They were distinguished in general by adding the name of the city or the place in which they were worshipped. Just like they do here in the California region with the haciendas. You know, they call they didn't call it the Port of Los Angeles, but El Pueblo de Los Angeles, El Pueblo de San Pedro, El Pueblo de Santa Barbara, the same thing, the same thing. So it wasn't anything different that these people did. They named the city after the god. Los Angeles, the city of the angels. And we do just as wicked in this city as they did in there. But there was a biasness that the white theologue, when he wrote about the alien cultures of the cultures that they dug up. And keep it in mind, these cultures were far older than ours. They were represented often by symbols taken from by the animal world, the bulls, lions, cows, doves, birds of prey, in which the generative forces of the consuming ardor of the sun was represented. This was the high culture, of course. They should have done that. See, I don't read the negativity into that. But certain racist cultures, when trying to upgrade or lift up their religion, has to tear the other religion down. Along with Baal was worship was Baalat, our corresponding goddess. So there was Baal and Baalat. Baalat was a corresponding goddess. Look at Mary worship. Same thing in Christianity. Throughout the region of the settled Semites, as we find it in Babylon, Canaan, and along with the settled Arameans, there was a duality of sex and the tendency to worship the goddess with the moral rites, as her shrines and in her name sexual license were permitted and commanded, and sometimes the sacrifice or female chastity was required in her service. At places, strange and unnatural lust forms part of her worship, and both female and male prostitutes inhabited her temples and served at her shrines, just like in the worship of Diana of Ephesus. This is ancient religion and ancient worship, and it was very well recognized. So you can see that I'm loving reading these old texts, and as I read these old texts, I'm picking up a glimpse of a person's disposition. I have to get some better reading glasses too. I need to go get better reading glasses because my eyes are getting worse. And I love to read. And some of this print is just, let me see if these glasses help out a little bit. All right. Such was the worship universally practiced in Palestine at that time when Israel entered her promised home. In the conquest, the devotees of this worship were not destroyed, but instead a policy of compromise was adopted, which allowed these evil practices to continue. No, I tell you the truth, but I believe there were too many Canaanites and they couldn't wipe them all out. And they were a very strong nation, because if you read from other archivers of ancient history, they would tell that they had a weaponry and ways to produce a dominant culture. But it says, and to corrupt the religious life of the Hebrews as it flourished in subsequent years. Every generation from their settlement in Canaan to the exile witnessed the old yet ever new struggle of Jehovah worship against Baal. This was not far off, unreal, imaginary, evil. It was real, ever present, alluring, and challenging. Because as the Hebrews came into that region, they didn't have enough people to wipe out all of that. See, now they have section 17 here that I find very interesting, and it's called Israel's Cruelty to the Canaanites. And I recall when reading this the first time I read it, I said, you know, why are they doing this? Why was this a open carte blanche to be evil against black people in Africa? Was it the whites' justification to think that they were superior to the blacks in some kind of way? And then I put this together when I try to say, why is it that most white churches in this country today would vote for a Donald Trump? Why in the hell would they vote for a mad, crazy man like Donald Trump? Not that some of the other presidents weren't mad and crazy, but let's see what Hester writes. Some students have been puzzled by the command of God to exterminate the Canaanites. We should remember that the experiences of these cruel, barbarous days were more than 1,300 years removed from the ethical ideas, standards of Jesus. Really? Then he says, that tickled me. That statement really tickled me. Then Hester says, we must judge them by the day in which they live. We should keep in mind also the fact that by the standard of that day, loyalty to the command of their God called for the extermination of all enemies of their God. Yes, just like the Muslims teach today. When you look at Al-Qaeda, when you look at that, we live in a more civilized world. We would hope that your religion won't go crazy, but they've always had religions like that. And when I see the Hebrews killing people up in mass, the Hebrew nation was just as wicked as theirs. That's why you should read the older texts. You'd pick up a better idea of what was going on. Continuing with Hester, in view of the very wicked and lascivious practices of these Canaanites, we may ask the question, was not the complete extermination of such people the only safeguard for the future life of his chosen people upon whom so much depended? I would say hell no. I would say hell no, because that's just where a lot of Jews think about the Palestinians over there, got them living in slavery. See, you have to be very, very careful of your religion and what your religion teaches. And see, I have a lot of these ancient books, and that's why I keep them and I read them, to keep my head right on what the hell is going on in my vision as a retired pastor. All right? Hester goes on and writes, and he says, the grave danger was that the Israelites might become amalgamated amalgamated, you know, mixed in together with them, with these pagan people, gradually adopt their practices of vicious paganism and lose all that they had been commissioned to give to the world. Wait a minute, hold it. If they were that weak, see, no. If, this is tickling me. But I guess that's the way they felt back in 1949 in this country. See, and remember, in 1949, this is right after World War II, and they had to destroy Nazism and Hitlerism and all that. And now the biggest foe on the planet in 1949 was communism. Joseph Stalin and communist Russia that had taken over most of Europe, and that's what the Brits, that's why the Brits wanted America to enter into the war in World War II, because he knew that, well, look at what the Ruskies did. When the Russians came into Berlin, they raped women, children, old women, killed up folk. It was horrible. That's why the Marshall Plan was enacted to try to feed the Europeans after World War II. If you really want to see a good movie that gives you a... Brad Pitt starred in that movie, and it was called... when he flew that plane. It's a war movie with Brad Pitt. Fury, that's the name of the movie. I recently watched it on Netflix. Fury, try to watch that movie. And then you pick up an idea what America had to, what America was restoring while Hester was writing this book. So the knowledge of the world and Europe being decimated by the crazy Germans, and now this hatred that the white Jews have for the Palestinians, who were just as, well... Let me finish this paragraph. This is making for some real good reading, and it's what's starting me to keep doing the cast, because as I'm cleaning up, I'm reading, and I'm putting things together, and I want you to put things together. Now, let me read this portion again. The Israelites might become amalgamated with these pagan people, gradually adapt their practices of vicious paganism, and lose all that had been commissioned that they've been commissioned to give the world. Really? If I look at what Jerusalem and what the Jews are giving the world today, I wouldn't want to be a part of their lifestyle. Indeed, Hester writes, this very thing did take place on an extent that was exceedingly dangerous. One wonders how much better it might have been if all of these evil influences had been removed so that the Israelites might have had an opportunity to develop without these insidious and inviting practices all about them. It might have saved them from the dark ages which followed the death of Joshua. And then he quote Leviticus 18, 24 through 28. I'm going to go there. You know, Hester bit off a handful. Reading this, and if this is the way you're doing world history, this is a sham. It really is a sham. And to teach, I guess you had to teach, I'm looking for Leviticus here. I guess you had to teach your Bible students this, I guess, if you wanted to. No, I'm not going to go to that. All I can say is that that is ridiculous. That's why it pays to know that when you're reading an history book, if they're still using this book teaching in that college, and that's what I may do, I may contact the college and say, are you still using this book to teach religion I certainly hope not, because it is very, very biased. Oh, my goodness. He just suggested that all of the Canaanites should have been wiped off the face of the earth to justify Judaism. And in a way to justify a little bit of what Christians think about. See, that's why I just dumped out of the whole thing. Because when you do the study of the history, you're going to find that it is a very morbid history at that. Very morbid, to say the least. Well, thank you for coming to my website. I'll be doing more things like this because I have a set of books out in my garage on the bottom shelf of a bookcase that is far older than this book. And I'm going to bring one out and start reading it one day. That's how I'll keep the cast going. Just keep looking at the things that were written about the Bible. Looking at the biasness. This is a hateful man to even suggest in his book that. I can't believe that he suggested it. Oh. Okay. Well, thank you for your prayers. Keep praying for me, and surely I'll keep praying for you. And we'll put another webcast up real soon.